Welcome back, everyone. This is the Prepared Mindset Podcast, and I'm your host, Austin, coming at you guys somewhat unexpectedly. And I say that not because I don't plan to release this episode this week, but I say that because I was initially supposed to be out of town today, and you know I would be traveling back from Indianapolis on a work trip tomorrow morning, or basically at the time that this episode was dropping would be when I would be approximately about an hour and a half home, because when I travel for work, I like to get on the road super early and beat that morning traffic out of busy areas, regardless of, you know, wherever the heck I'm at. And actually, that's pretty much true for any trip. If you guys know traffic patterns and things, it just helps you be more prepared. See what I did there? For you know, beating the drive home. I think, you know, when I go like up to northern Michigan, right? Anybody who lives in Michigan knows that you basically don't want to be getting on the road around lunchtime on Sunday coming home or coming back down to southeast Michigan, because everybody waits until lunchtime. You know, they want to sleep in and live out the last few moments of the weekend, have some lunch, then we'll get on the road. Well, everybody gets on the road then, and 75 South becomes a parking lot, and it takes you, you know, almost twice as long to get home. So I'm always a big proponent of, hey, if we're not on the road by 8:30, we shouldn't be getting on the road until 3:30, because the traffic between those hours is just going to be hellacious regardless. So I'm obviously coming at you guys. You can't see this. I'm at home. I'm recording. I'm doing my normal thing. So decided to do a solo discussion this week on, you know, some of this. Like, I don't usually like doing discussions around gear. I think that when you hyperfixate on a piece of kit, hyperfixate on a tool, right, it makes you a little bit less effective, because then you start seeing that tool as the one and only way to solve every problem. And I think one of the things that we should and do, I think we do talk about it here, focus on, is being multifaceted. So if you're talking about being capable with firearms, I think that's a broader discussion of, can you run a shotgun? Can you run a handgun? Can you run a rifle? Can you run them out to distance? Can you run them close up, right? But additionally, the skills that go with that, the supporting gear that goes with it, because as much as, you know, it's a fine line we have to walk. You know, I think as much as some people like to say that you know, you can't just buy the skill, right? It can't just be about the gear. And that's true. However, the counterpoint to that, and I say this very precariously, I guess, or very gingerly, is that when's the last time you saw a master mechanic without good quality tools? You know, we talked about this a little bit with Chris Costa in last week's episode, which is a total banger, by the way. Super cool discussion. If you guys haven't had the opportunity, I would say definitely halt listening to this episode. Go back and listen to my discussion with Chris, because it's so cool, man. He's like a historian of our training community, just because he's been here, you know, basically since this all blew up, and even a little bit before then. So really, really awesome opportunity sitting down with him. But you have to have the right tools. But then we also can respect, I think, that piece of the discussion around having the software that supports the hardware. You know, just like when we have to upgrade our operating systems and things like that on our computer, right? The software constantly has to be refreshed and updated, which is what our training is, because tactics change, our abilities change, right? That's our software. The hardware, I mean, man, you can run the same, and some guys do, you can run that same Gen 3 Glock 17 for like 10 years, man. And until stuff starts to really wear out, or you got to replace components, you're going to be able to keep running that gun. It's not always the hardware. And yes, upgrading hardware to different stuff can have its advantages. We're going to get into it, because I think people have some misconceptions around both sides of that argument. And we'll get into it. Hopefully it'll be more clear when I finish here. Like, hey, I'm not just saying that skill is the only thing that matters. Hey, I'm not just saying that having good equipment and good gear is the only thing that matters, because we just did a fantastic video on the YouTube channel talking about affordable gear, not budget and not cheap, just affordable. A lot of people got some real strong opinions in the comment section on YouTube talking about, you know, hey, if you're really trying to build a budget blaster, you'd buy all used parts and Palmetto this and Arrow that. And it's like, yes, you could build it on a budget, but is it going to be as reliable as you're looking for? And I think that's when we talk about the reliability in that realm of the discussion, right? You're burying the lead. And yeah, we're going to get into all of that with this discussion, you guys. I think it's a really, I think we're going to make some really good points here. I think that if you are somebody who is on your journey to becoming better prepared and wanting to train up and learn more, while also wanting to avoid some of the pitfalls that many of us fall into, yeah, this is it, man. This is what you've been looking for. So We're going to dig into all of that, you guys. But before I do that, like I said, I have some great partners. I don't know if I said that. I do have some great partners in the industry that they throw their support behind us. They're fantastic companies. They're fantastic people. They see the mission and the goals here that we have at Prepare Mindset, and they want those same things. They want to support us. And then I want to do my part by obviously telling you guys to go support them, because it is very easy in this community to be taken advantage of. There's snake oil out there, you know, tactics people, training people, yeah, gear companies that conceal the origin of where they're making their gear, whether that's nylon, whether that's, you know, firearms parts or optics, right? Oh yeah, no, it's all assembled here in the United States is a great line that people throw out there, or it's quality controlled in the United States. It's a nice fancy way of saying it's assembled and made in some kind of third world sweatshop. But we work with some great companies that don't do that stuff. And I want to make sure I take the opportunity to say, A, thank you to them, but B, direct y'all towards them, because you can trust them and you can make your purchases and spend your money knowing you're getting quality experiences from them. That starts with Custom Night Vision, you guys. Their website is customnightvision.com. And we're going to get into night vision in this discussion today, because certainly it's a huge part of anyone's capability. And I know a lot of you guys are sitting here going, oh yeah, it must be nice if you can afford it. And here's the thing, man, you can. You might have to give up a few things. You might have to sell a few things. You might have to do some uncomfortable stuff to, you know, make that financially work. But you can get into a single tube device pretty easily these days, and head on over to customnightvision.com and see everything that the team there has in stock to help you achieve that goal for yourself. Whether that's a PVS 14, which is always my first recommendation to folks, it is probably the most tried, true, and proven and reliable unit out there on the night vision market. Whether that's with a green tube or a white phosphor tube from, you know, Elbit or Photonis or, yes, of course, L3. The PVS 14 single tube unit is probably the best unit you can invest in for yourself or for a family member, but it doesn't stop there. You guys, they have additional offerings like the Tonto unit from Nocturne Industries, like the ruggedized PVS 14 that just came out. Or if you're looking to get into duals because you want both eyes covered, you want to have that. You don't want to just buy once and then save more and suffer through it and, you know, then get to the duals. You want to buy once, you want to cry once and get something good. Hey, they have a full line of binocular housings available on the site as well. So whether that's something like, yes, the DTNVSs from Acton Black. Everybody loves the DTNVSs. They have those in stock. They have the RNVGs from AB Night Vision, I'm sorry. The MH1s from Low Light Innovations. They have all kinds of great stuff available. Tons of options from Nocturne Industries as well. Again, head on over to customnightvision.com. Check out all the housings and the tubes they have available. And if you still have questions, if you don't know what you're looking for, if you have no idea, use the chat function in the lower right-hand corner of the site to talk to one of the team members there, whether it's Trevor or Kevin or Ben. Ask them, hey, can you help me pick out a set of tubes or a single tube? This is what I'm looking for. Their goal, their mission is to give you the most transparent buying experience possible, you guys. It's customnightvision.com. Go check it out. Additionally, want to say thank you to our friends over at 100 Concepts. Their motto is do good, be dangerous, live free. You guys, they're a fantastic company bringing all sorts of solutions, tools for your capability in the field, bringing them to you at a reasonable price point and with a great amount of thought and durability and consideration. When I say consideration, I mean it. They actually listen to the feedback from their customers, which, believe it or not, very rare in the market. So when they released their light caps and their scope caps, and people said, hey, we hate the Ranger band, they developed their shock collar, which you can purchase at 100concepts.com. Hey, we want something that's more durable, maybe a little bit more flexible so it doesn't crack and break. Or, hey, we want something a little more quiet. That's where the ruggedized light caps and scope caps come in. And again, they listened, they took that feedback, they developed that. You guys can see and feel that rubberized texture that those new devices have. It feels great in the hand, and it is much, much quieter on the platforms. You guys, head over to 100concepts.com. You can see everything they got available over there, whether it's the EOTech EXPS3, they have the Smith loops for your sling, they're even carrying slings now, all kinds of good stuff. Again, it's 100concepts.com. So thank you to both those companies, been huge supporters of ours for several years now. Could not bring this to you guys every week without them. You can go to both companies and expect outstanding service and great customer support. Now, like I was talking about today, we're going to talk a little bit. We're going to balance your gear, your training, your mindset. We're going to talk about kind of, I don't like to call it like the three pillars of preparedness or anything like that, because I think once you get into anything that involves some kind of like catchy, alliteration or catchphrase or motto or, you know, whatever, you're starting to stray further from the point that you're trying to get into. So let's talk about like these, I guess we'll stick with that, right? Core pillars, right? So gear selection, optics, training methods, skills, night vision. But more importantly here, how they interlock with each other, right? Maybe some of the dangers about, you know, overemphasizing one and neglecting others kind of creates some blind spots for you. Like I said in the very beginning, if you are so hyper fixated on building the perfect, you know, recce rifle, you know, not a Mark 12 clone, but better than that, right? With a super accurate barrel and a huge muzzle brake and, you know, the suppressor that's going to, you know, minimize all of your gas blowback and this huge optic is going to maximize clarity and all this stuff. And maximize magnification, you know, that could be an outstanding system. However, the problem that we run into with that is that it usually becomes very heavy, right? So then when you get into training and things like that, you start to find out like, oh, this is really heavy. It's not reasonable for me to carry this thing around, whether I'm going through the woods or, you know, clearing a structure or whatever else have you. There's pros and cons to all this stuff, and we're really going to get into it. I'm going to try and do my best to provide insights to you guys. Now, again, for those of you guys joining us for the very first time, welcome. I'm happy to have you here. I want to, again, just say, this is just my experiences, all right? My opinion, what I've seen, what I've heard, what I've learned, what I've experienced on my own, right? Through my own successes and failures as a prepared and armed civilian. Don't be very clear here. I never served in the military and I was never in law enforcement. So whatever that means to you, I like to put that disclaimer out here first, because if you think that what I have to say here isn't worth the time, then, you know, maybe it isn't for you and I apologize. Would love to have you stick through this with us. And, you know, hey, if you feel so compelled at the end of it, drop me a message. Let me know what you think. But getting into it now, like I said in the introduction, we're talking about your tools here. That's your gear. That's your kit. That's your optics. And I think that we have moved to various points in the media, in the gun tube space is what I'll say. When we talk about selecting gear and stuff like that, whether that's your kit, so your plate carrier or your chest rig, your belts, even your clothing, stuff like that, the pouches that you carry, how it's all set up. Like we have very much moved, and this ebbs and flows, right? So it's not like, hey, for 5 years it's this way and then we see a transition, it's another way. I think it goes back and forth and it's fluid depending on what's popular within the community. So, you know, maybe 10 years ago when Lucas was first getting his start at T-Rex Arms, maybe within a couple of years of that, maybe 2016, 2017, perhaps 2018, I don't know, talking very much about you need to set up, and that this video I believe is still on their YouTube channel, where you're talking about how to set up a carbine with Lucas, and it's his like 13.9-inch, I think it's an American Defense, maybe it isn't, no, I think it's a Midwest, I don't know. It's his 13.9 pin and welded gun. It's got an aimpoint T2 on it. I really, really wanted to clone that gun when I first saw it. It was painted, looked super, super cool. He ran the shit out of it, obviously. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I want. That's exactly what I need. And I actually spent a couple of years trying to clone it in the cheaper ways. So like I had a 16-inch barrel instead of chopped one. I did have the full length, same handguard that he has, but obviously 15-inch. Now I have the same handguard from Midwest Industries, but it's the M-Lock version. It's a little bit different. It's on my SPR. Still a fanboy at heart about some goofy things. Some of that stuff just never goes away, you know? But the point he was making was you should set up your rifle for your individual mission, your individual goals and purposes. And that's an important piece of the conversation, because I think sometimes we get very caught up, or it is very easy, I should say, to get caught up in trying to emulate that which we most aspire to. So it's what I mean by that is it's very cool to watch videos from a lot of the personalities in the industry. A lot of these folks I've had on this podcast before, you know, Joe Dawson from Bruiser Industries, you see how he has his long range rifle set up. You're like, man, that's badass. I'm going to start building that direction, start heading that direction. And, you know, and that's cool, except if what you do doesn't support that. So maybe you're spending all of your time training with your buddies and they all want to run CQB. And this is, I'm making this situation up in a vacuum, okay? But bear with me. All your buddies run CQB, but you're over here building a 16 or an 18 inch 5.56 gas gun, or even a 308 gun or 6.5 Creedmoor, right? With big glass on it and, you know, a heavy ass bipod, because you're not really thinking about running around with it or moving through doors with it. And then you find out that, hey, my mission, because I live in a condo complex or an apartment complex, really, my mission doesn't have anything to do with long range shooting for the most part. Like, should you be capable of it? I would say yes, obviously. But in the immediate use case of your weapon system, you're probably going to do more structure clearance and close encounter work, I would think. So maybe something like a 13.9 or some kind of SBR would behoove you, because like I said, it's easy to want to emulate these people. And that's not a dig at Joe, by the way. Joe's fantastic. I love his content and he was a fantastic guest. You know, can't wait to have him back on. But what I'm saying is that we get caught up in all the wrong things. So it's very easy for guys to say, oh, I need this because I saw it on this guy's build. I need this because dirty civilian, again, no shade. I've had both both Josh and Drew have been on this podcast. It was pre-Dirty Civilian, but, you know, so I got with those guys before it was cool. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, it's one of those things where we look at people, we see their success, and we want to emulate that. So it's a concept as old as time. I'm not trying to be overly critical of it, but I am saying that you should take people's content, people's information, and people's insight for what it's worth, you know. So you want to make sure that you're selecting gear that matches your mission first and foremost, but also that matches your training level. So what I see all the time, and you guys know exactly what we're talking about, there are people who jump in this space and sometimes they have more money, they have more dollars than cents. I think that's the old adage, right? And I love it. And guys will go out and they'll go buy whatever brand rifle because their favorite influencer told them, hey, you need a Daniel. You need a Daniel Defense rifle. This thing's awesome. Or you need LWRC, right? Because I know LWRC makes fantastic piston guns. And then, oh, you need this riser. And you go, I don't even know what that's for, but I'm going to go buy one. And they go, and you have to have this optic. And maybe you overspend on that optic because it's currently, this has happened to friends where they're like, oh, I need this. But they're transitioning between one generation and another generation of that optic. So the only ones you can find are priced up because the demand is way up on them, right? So you overpay $200 on the optic and you don't know how to use it because, you know, you only understand MOA, but the optic is in mil radians. And I'm not going to say one's better than the other. It's totally aside from the point here, but you're convinced you need it, right? Because that's what somebody online told you. And so you end up getting to a point where the gear that you have doesn't match your training level, you know, and this is why I think for a long time people were like, oh, you know, 2016, 2017, go build a Roland Special. That'll be the Glock, you know, that you need. And that's the last Glock you'll ever need, because if you guys aren't familiar with the Roland Special is, we see it all the time now, not in its classic form. Classically, I forget who made the compensator, but it was a Glock 19 with a compensator on it and then an X300 light. And the slide was cut for an RMR, and it was called a Roland Special. You know, that was the setup. And guys were concealed carrying that. Guys were running competitions with it, and people were convinced if you wanted to shoot fast splits like Lucas, because he was running one. I think Grand Thumb ran one for a minute when he was, you know, in his original state, his unevolved form before he turned into Flannel Daddy. You know, he's still doing the black background and stuff. He was running a Roland Special. Everybody had a Roland Special. So it became one of these things where everyone's got to have it. Well, then the problems you run into, though, is that we have people who don't know how to shoot handgun going out and buying a gun. And before they've put any rounds through it, sending it out and putting another $1,000 into it from a gunsmith or somebody. So you're getting a trigger job done. You're getting a compensator put on. Buying a new barrel, because Glocks don't come factory with a threaded barrel. You're spending a ton of money before you even know how iron sights work or how to use them. You're sending that thing out, you're getting that slide milled and getting an RMR slapped on there. And I do think that red dots, for the record, are easier to teach new people how to shoot with than irons, but I think you should know how to shoot with irons. And you know, then you're getting stippling done and undercuts on your grip and all kinds of stuff and magwells thrown on there and everything. And before you know it, you've got this souped up race gun that is a piece of equipment that is not built to match your level of training. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't take advantage of every opportunity that we have to have a better gun that shoots better, more accurately. But I just watched this happen like a month ago, you guys. I took my brother, and I think I talked about this on the pod even, took my brother out to the range. He has never shot a comped handgun before, and the Glock 19 that he did shoot before had a very light trigger put in. He had the whole ghost kit put in, so it's probably like a 2.5 or a 3 pound trigger. Really, really light. And, you know, I think that it contributed certainly to masking some of the technique issues that he had. And when he got out there with a brand new Glock 45 with a factory trigger, and he had a Radian ramjet and afterburner, so the barrel and the compensator, but not the recoil spring. And he gets out there, and every second or third round that he puts on target is inducing a malfunction. And, you know, the first assumption is, well, blame the barrel, blame the compensator, because that's what everybody had talked about online, right? Hey, that's a problem. So then it's like, okay, well, let's lube the shit out of it. Did you clean it well enough? Blah, blah, blah. We check all the stuff. And then it just turns out, you know, through process of elimination and everything, it was his grip. He was, you know, he was squeezing way too much of the support hand, or sorry, with his primary hand, not enough of the support hand. He wasn't interlocking his hands, you know, as well as he could and stuff to really, you know, lock down that gun. And I don't want to say he was limp wristing it, but essentially that's what he was doing. And it was inducing malfunctions, because when you fuck with the gas system or the gassing of any firearm, you're opening the door for a lot of reliability issues if you're not as consistent as can be on that weapon system. Certainly, it's less an issue on rifles, as so many things are, but it's still an issue. And with handguns, yeah, it's a major issue. That's what I say. When you're selecting gear that doesn't match your training level, that creates problems. And while I'm not going to advocate, like, hey, you should just be one of these guys that, like, unapologetically only runs stock Glocks, I think that there's some guys out there that can do that. You know, Milspec Mojo did run stock Glocks and can, you know, shoot the piss out of stock Glocks. Guess what? Now he shoots a Staccato, I'm pretty sure. I mean, he probably still owns the Glocks, but Staccatos that have super light triggers, 1911 style triggers, will always be far superior. I know some of you guys have been waiting a while for me to say that out loud, but it's true. You know, the 1911 and 2011 style triggers will always be superior to Glock triggers. Now, that platform as a whole might have some issues and shit, and maybe that's a great example of guys who go, oh, I have to go buy a $5,000 Staccato, and it's like, dude, you just blew all of your money on one handgun because you were so sure that you needed it, but you can't run that gun because you don't know fundamentals, your training isn't there. And what you could have done was spent $600 on a new Glock, maybe it's the MOS, so you spent $1,000 on that new Glock and a decent red dot, and then you still have, you know, I don't know, another $4,000 to go buy a carbine and an optic if you want, white light, holster, belt, like all the other stuff we're going to get into. And this is a really common thing that people fall into, you guys. People overbuy it. They chase trends, right? Ooh, Staccatos. That's, you have, like, one of the things that's happening right now, and I don't want to make this, I'm not trying to bash Staccato, because as a business, I think they're doing a lot of things right. I think they're doing all the things that you would want to do as a business to grow your customer base, right? Because then they're going to spend more money. You're going to do better as a business. I am not hating on Staccato. And if I could afford one, I would run the shit out of one. And as a matter of fact, if anybody's listening that wants to get me one, I would never say no to one or even something comparable to that, because it's become very obvious in the market that a lot of companies see the success and they're trying to mimic it. But one of the things that I find most annoying right now is all the videos. I think it's Michelle Viscusi, I think is her last name. She used to shoot for Team Glock and now shoots for Staccato. And this is not a dig at her, just the clip that sticks out in my mind is her talking about how great Staccatos are and how those guns just shoot themselves. And I've had that conversation with people. Like, literally, I was at a range day in December. We're out there doing standards drills, so the GBRS standards drills, which are a great way to evaluate your skill, your rifle setup, i.e., like, is your optic too high for you because you're always having issues with it, or too low? Is your trigger too heavy? Is it too light because you're breaking that shot sooner than you wanted? You know, stuff like that. And I actually had somebody who, I mean, he no longer is a part of our training circle because he was unsafe on the range, and I made the executive decision to dismiss him. Some people didn't agree with that. They thought, you know, hey, I'll give him another shot. I was like, fuck no. And basically, I won't even allude to it. I'll just go out and say it. If you're one of those guys that thinks you can walk around on the range with a hot rifle because you want to be as fast as possible during your ready up drills, and then, you know, you don't see a problem with it, you are a fucking problem. And I just won't have it. But he actually sat there and advocated, oh, the staccato 110% makes you a better shooter. I go, I would disagree, dude. I think having good skills, good fundamentals, a solid base in how to shoot a handgun, regardless of what it is, are going to make you a better shooter. Will running a staccato allow you to perform with a smaller margin of error? I would agree with that statement, just because, yes, it is a pleasant gun to shoot with a very good trigger. The added weight from being an all-steel gun does help when you compare it to a lot of the striker-fired guns in the market, where only the upper is metal and the lower is polymer. So, yeah, you got to fight a little bit more with that recoil impulse. Yes, I would say there's definite advantages, but I think that's the biggest problem, is that people genuinely believe, if I go buy, you know, a 2011, whether that's, you know, staccato or a Fowler, or if it's one of the clones coming out of Turkey or something like that, that they have to have that because it's going to make them a better shooter. And in reality, I don't know that that's necessarily true. And some of those clone guns are absolutely, like, abysmally unreliable. And I don't think can be overstated. I think if you're going to buy a handgun, you should train with it. If you're going to carry it, it needs to be reliable. You need to keep it clean. You ought to take care of it. This is stuff that, you know, guys that do this shit for a living and stuff will, they'll tell you too. Like, hey, if that's your carry gun, that should not, in most instances, that should not be the gun that you don't clean for 60,000 rounds. Because you don't know when it's actually going to start having problems. Now, if that's your training rifle and you just want to beat the piss out of it and see how long it takes till it fails because you do product testing, that is an entirely different conversation. Don't fucking get it twisted, you guys. If you have the opportunity to clean your shit between missions, you know, between deployments, between, you know, call-outs in law enforcement, or, you know, between competitions and range days with your buddies, you think there's competition shooters out there that go to the competition with the dirtiest shit gun? I would think most of them take the opportunity to clean it to make sure that if they're really going for big money, they can do it. Now, if they're just shooting for fun and they don't care, that's different. But I'll tell you what, you're shooting for nationals or something, you're going to make sure your handgun is clean, ready to go, and in good working order, at least as best to your ability. Now, taking that a step further, right, this is, we go to the other side of it, because a lot of guys say you can't buy, and I just finished saying you can't buy the training, the gear doesn't get you there on its own. And that's an incredibly important point. Now, when we talk about training, training's a multiplier, okay? And it will take, you know, every bit of capability, anything that you can do. Having good, adequate, quality training is a multiplier to that. If you were to give your skill, like, think about it in video games where you're like, you know, you give your skill a score out of 10. If you're a 2 out of 10 at the beginning of the game, what do you do with your character? You put them through training and development, and you level them up, right? That's what training essentially is. So your training is a multiplier. So you go from a 2 out of 10 to a 4 out of 10 to a 10 out of 10, right? Training is a multiplier essentially for every dollar that you've spent on your equipment. And think about that. A lot of guys go, oh, no, it still doesn't come. No, equipment doesn't matter. Yes, it does. If equipment doesn't matter, then why do the top teams in the world, the top agencies in the world, not just run whatever shitty equipment they can fucking find? It's because it does fucking matter. Now, is it going to be the difference maker? Usually not, but it does fill in a lot of those gaps. It does close a lot of those gaps. We don't have to worry about pouches ripping off your kit and yard sailing, you know, your medical supplies everywhere because they're stitched well, made well. It's not going to rip off your belt. It's going to deploy the way it's designed to. And I'm sure you guys have seen stuff like that, you know, whether on the range with buddies or someplace else, hopefully not in the field where lives are dependent on it. I've seen fucking med kits fall off. I've seen fucking med kits fall off and come open and just dump shit everywhere. I've seen guys just drop tourniquets purely from just running. It just works its way out of that stupid little elastic sleeve and fall on the ground. And then you're like, oh, you know, I've even seen, actually just a month ago, you know, and Shane's cool. He's not gonna fucking care if I tell this story. We were running a grid exercise. So you start at 50, run to the right, so the, you know, 25 yards to the next cone. You run forward, and you're at a 25 yard cone. Running from the 50 yard up to the 25 yard, just fucking running. His staccato fell out of his Kydex drop holster. Just from running. It's like, oh, well, yep, should check on the screws and the retention in that holster, because you're running through the woods doing that shit, you ain't gonna fucking find that gun. And training is where you shake out these things. It's where you find the problems with your kit, find the problems with your gear. And, you know, having that opportunity to expose those flaws and those problems is invaluable. You know, wearing your kit on the flat range is another great way. That's training. You know, a lot of guys, I think you think of training and it has to be organized drills with a group of people with designated SOPs, or it has to be CQB, or it has to be small unit tactics. You know, just shooting drills in full gear on the flat range to me is still training. I can't tell you, I was running a couple different carriers for a while, and two of them from the same company, I had the exact same fucking problem. Complete different models, right? But very much designed similarly, where I would go to shoulder that rifle and that shoulder strap was exactly where I wanted to put the fucking rifle. And this is where we get guys that will, you know, they'll cheat it on the flat range. And I'm not saying you should never wear full kit. And I'm not saying you should always wear full kit. I'm saying that you should have a healthy amount of both, because I think there's value in being able to take that carrier off or taking that chest rig off and being able to just focus on pure performance on demand. Hey, how quickly can I shoulder this rifle from a low ready or from a high port position? Get on the gun, make strong connection, right? Get that shoulder, or get that stock, I'm sorry. Take that stock, get it firmly in your shoulder pocket, right? Get your eye behind that optic, pick up that dot, and then put six rounds on target. If we're talking about a bill drill, just as an easy example, versus can you do that same shit in your plate carrier? You know, the plate carrier adds a level of complexity because, yes, typically you're competing for real estate on your body. Now, if you do this kind of stuff for work or you're just a concerned civilian, right, the concept is exactly the same. You're going to use this gear when you enter a potentially lethal situation. And a lot of guys, oh, you're just, you know, this is just fantasy. This is just make-believe. You guys are LARPing. I don't subscribe to that, because a lot of us are doing this because we, I don't want to say fear, but we concern what may happen in the event of a foreign invasion, right? Think about the movie Red Dawn. Is that super likely? No, I don't. I personally don't believe so. Some people really do think that that's more probable. And I don't want to even get into that dispute. There's certainly a number of things geopolitically happening that at any given time could lead to something like that, I guess, right? I think in that movie, they like marched across the Bering Strait land bridge or something. It was the 80s. Wild shit happened in movies, you know. But in both instances, also for the military, you are training to be able to use that gear. That's why you spend the money on it. If you're buying, and this goes back to the previous point, if you're just buying gear and buying kit because the internet tells you that you should have it because you own the rifle, without fully understanding why it is that you should have it, you're on the complete wrong fucking path, man. You are. You're wasting money at that point. That's money you could be spending on other things for your overall preparedness. Or, I mean, let's just be completely fucking frank, other things you could be spending money on for your fucking happiness and sanity. You know, like a vacation for your family, or do something nice for your wife. I'm a big proponent of taking care of the family. You know, I don't have kids, but I do have a wife and two dogs, and nothing makes me happier than seeing them happy when I'm able to do something cool for them. And honestly, I feel pretty guilty when I'm like, oh, hey, I just bought this brand new helmet. It was like $1,600 because helmets are expensive. And then I go, hey, I should do, I'm not saying it's a tit for tat thing, but, you know, hey, do nice shit for your fucking wife. You know, like usually in most instances, your wife takes care of you in more than one way. You know, like think about all the stuff she does. Think about all the shit she puts up with. You know, I mean, I haven't been single in a while, but I've heard the internet dating game is shitty right now. That's all. I'll leave it at that, right? But your training is your multiplier. So being able to train with the gear you have, with the weapons platforms you have, so belts, yes, plate carriers, chest rigs, whether they're overt or covert, if the holsters and stuff are in the waistband, like a T-Rex sidecar, if you're still with T-Rex, or tier one, right? Are you training with that? Do you know how to draw from that? do you have a holster set up? Like, and it goes both ways. As much as we can overbuy on gear and fall into the trap of like, oh, you bought this $5,000 gun with this $200 holster, you don't need that. I've also, you know, and I don't want to like go backwards in this necessarily, but we've all seen those people that go out and they buy, you know, a $400 Canik because it's, well, it's just like a Glock 19. It holds 15 rounds and it's a subcompact. And you're like, okay. And they go out and they buy the Amazon brand, whatever that might be, Kydex holster that looks a little bit like a sidecar because it has a molded magazine carrier attached to it. But the ride height isn't quite there and the retention isn't quite right. So it's either super tight or super sloppy and no amount of adjusting with the screws totally gets you there. And then you go and you start training with that cheap, shitty gear and you start having immediate problems. Like, it happens. I've seen it fucking happen. I had a friend show up to a range day. I want to say it was last fall. I think it was last fall. Yeah. And he was excited because he had just bought. So it's the M1911, the A1 or something, the 45A1, whatever. The 1911 that the Marine Corps uses, right? But it wasn't exactly that one. It was the T-SOS clone of that gun, which I'm not hating on clone firearms. I know some of that stuff is way overpriced purely because it won a military contract. I think, you know, if you're just buying it as like a range toy or something and you just want to shoot the shit out of it, like, dude, cool, man. And then it gets worse, though, because then instead of, you know, and there's tiers to this stuff. So if you need a weapon light and you don't want to spend Surefire or Mod Light money, I think Streamlight is great for that. You know, certainly some people even prefer the Streamlight controls over some other companies. But then you have some companies below Streamlight, like Nightstick, which I've never used the Nightstick stuff. And it appears to have been a... I won't say a knockoff, but a copy of the TLR1 body and design, and that kind of shit happens in this industry all the time. So I don't want to like deliberately throw shade at Nightstick, but I think they know it looks very much like a TLR1. Now, is the Nightstick light, whether it's for rifle or pistol, is it decent stuff? I've actually heard pretty good things about Nightstick, but I've never used it myself. But is that a lower quality light? I would think so, right? So what happens is when you start stacking some of these, I'll call them tolerances, but you take this clone 1911, it's a cheaper brand from not the US, right? With maybe not the right spec on the rails, and then this cheaper light, which I don't think is made in the US, with maybe not the same spec on the mounting system, and then you kind of have some problems. So he drew this 1911 and starts putting rounds on range. He got 3 rounds down before that light came flying off the end of the gun. And put it back on, and he cranked. I watched him reef the ever-loving piss out of this fucking screw, this thumb screw, to attach this pistol light onto this T-SOS 1911. And, you know, okay, go ahead, man, build drill, you know, round 2, goes ahead and he draws this fucking gun and 6 rounds, and on round 3, one more time, that light comes loose and goes flying off the end of the gun. And it's like, dude, I think that you either, so you look at it and you go, all right, well, something ain't right here. You know, either the tolerances of the mount on the light are not correct, or that rail is out of spec. My first thought would be that it was the rail. We didn't sit there and like try other lights or anything, but it just goes to show you, like, if you cut too many corners, and we just did a YouTube video talking about, you know, affordable options, not necessarily just cheap options. And when you cut too many corners, sometimes that's the experience you have. If you were in a life or death situation, right, where you were drawing that handgun for self-defense in the dark where you needed that weapon light, and we know if any of you guys have done low light training, because we are talking about training right now, right, you turn that light on, you put rounds down range, and then you turn the fucking light off if you think there's still a threat there so they don't know where you're moving to. That's a fairly fundamental concept when you're talking about low light and no light tactics and shooting, right? So at that point, if you've just put 3 rounds into a guy, which I think is fairly standard, you know, 2-3 rounds, and you go to shut that light off, and guess what? The light's gone. Well, yeah, now they can't see you and you're moving, but you also can't necessarily identify what you're shooting at, which is a real fucking problem as a prepared civilian and also in law enforcement, because we are accountable, right? We're accountable for every fucking round that we put down range. And if we can't be accountable for that, it's a huge problem. So because then the question you have to ask yourself is, do I trust that this is the only person here? do I trust my night vision, my ability to see in the dark here? Did I carry my handheld light? And if I did carry my handheld light, am I read up enough? Am I trained up enough on one-handed shooting or shooting with a weapon light? Or maybe it has one of those Theorem switchback thumb rings on it, so I can still form a two-handed grip and have a light and be effective. It's not a good situation to be in when you have to go to plan B, right? Or plan C even in some events, because you had a failure that could have been completely alleviated by just buying better gear. And that's where I'm saying this has to be a fine line, and your training has to support it, you know? So your gear investment has to match what you're trying to do, and then your training investment has to match the level of investment of your gear. I think that it's, you know, again, I think about it in terms of like, you know, the A, B, C, D tier stuff and S tier being the best. You kind of have to balance it all out, right? You can't have like, you shouldn't have, I think, all S tier gear, but then C tier training and abilities. I mean, can you get a lot of stuff done that way? Yeah. I mean, if you are not a great shooter, but you're a serviceable shooter and you just have the ability to buy nicer stuff because you have money, that's cool, but I still would never, you know, I'm not going to look at anybody who would come to me and want to train and want to get better at stuff, right? And join my training circle and like that and go, yeah, I need tomorrow I'm going out to the store, I'm going to buy a fucking Infinity, which is a really, really nice 2011 style race gun for competition, you know. And I have friends that do pretty well for themselves. They work in good fields, they make good money, they have really nice homes and things, and they go out and they buy good things for themselves. And I've had one buddy in particular went out and bought a Glock 34, shoots pretty well with it. He did not go out, and I don't know the intimate details of this man's financial situation. I have every confidence that if he really needed to go out and drop $5,000, he could, okay? He didn't go out and buy a 2011. He didn't go out and buy the best fucking thing he could. He went out and bought a Glock, because a Glock is a nice beginner platform. You got the 34, it's going to shoot a little bit flatter, you're going to have a little bit better experience with it, because it's, you know, a little bit more mass, so kind of that same principle behind shooting a all-steel 1911 or 2011-style gun. Certainly a worse trigger than a 1911-style firearm, but went and got that, bought a good holster, got a Safariland is good, got the Surefire X300, you know, good light, got a Holosun optic on it, with not the best red dot out there, far from the worst also, and guess what he did? He went and spent a bunch of money on ammo, and then he's trained, he is practiced, he's worked on his draw stroke, and his dot acquisition, and, you know, all those things, and guess what? Now he's a fucking shooter, dude. Now he knows what he's doing. Now he knows what's up. And he didn't need to go out and buy a bunch of S-tier gear. You know, I hate coming back to that. It sounds so fucking stupid when I say S-tier. But you guys hopefully are understanding the point that I'm making with that. And I would think that a lot of people would look at just a Glock, you know. I know it's the 34 and you can't get them anymore. They're kind of unobtainium. But most people would not look at that and think that that's some sort of weird high-end gun. They would look at that as like an A or B tier pistol, you know, and go get some good training. Because the training, again, cannot overstate this. The training is the multiplier for every dollar spent on equipment. So I look at it as you should try and align them. You can look at it as a multiplier, it regardless of how you like to put it in what perspective you like to look at it. There has to be a balance there. You know, you have to be able to train not only in deploying that firearm, but in, this is where I think it gets interesting, is being able to deploy that in certain situations. I don't want to say like scenario-based training, but what I will say is if you're somebody who plans on, you EDC, right, a handgun, and you plan on having to deploy that to defend yourself, you better be fucking taking classes and hitting the range working on a draw from concealment. And that's to say nothing of dry fire. If you don't leave the house with your firearm, you're just one of those people, like, you have your CPL, it's uncomfortable for you to conceal carry, you never have it with you, then I would say, yeah, then don't worry about it. Because if you also go ahead and don't have any training, your multiplier is zero, right? So then we think about it. When you multiply two values, if there's no value on one side, i.e. no training, you're multiplying by zero. And what is any number multiplied by zero? It's fucking zero. So if you have a really nice carry gun or even a really shitty carry gun, you're going to do absolutely fucking zero with that if you don't train. And what does that translate to for us as prepared civilians in the event that we have to defend ourselves? You're drawing either your Glock 43 or your revolver or your Glock 19 or, you know, whatever the fuck it is that you're carrying, right? And you're going to start dispatching rounds downrange at, you know, your perceived threat. Whether you know for sure that they're a threat or not, I don't know. Your level of training sucks, so you might just think somebody with the wrong skin color is a fucking threat. Half the people in this fucking country, that's still a real issue, right? And then, guess what? Now you have to answer for every time you squeeze that fucking trigger. So, that's a huge problem. Anybody who, you know, and I had friends that said this shit to me when we had that No Kings protest stuff going on 2 months ago when I was getting ready to head to Florida. And, oh yeah, I'm stacking mags, man. I'm just ready. You know, I'll be ready in case shit happens. And I'm like, what the fuck do you think is going to happen? And in the event that it does happen, what the fuck do you think you're going to do about it with a stack of loaded magazines? Then you're just going to indiscriminately fire out your top fucking window at people? Like, no. And if you had had appropriate training and amount of, if you had appropriate time on range, if you'd worked with people and stuff in a team-based environment and read into these things, you would know. You can't do that. You can't defend property with lethal force. Not in Michigan, unless they're trying to enter your home. And it's a whole other convoluted situation. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to give you legal advice. But you guys listening, a lot of you guys know, you can't defend property with lethal force in most instances. There has to be like a serious threat to life. And if you want to know more about that, and I encourage you to want to know more about that, go take a CPL class or go take a refresher on CPL. Or, you know, if you have concealed carry insurance, which if you are concealed carrying, I think is probably a decent idea, call them and ask, because you pay them every month for them to cover you. So it only behooves them to make you better prepared and better informed, because guess what? They're still going to collect that premium whether you ever draw that firearm or not, right? And if you go 30 years as a concealed carrier and you're with, I don't know, USCCA or whatever, right? They're going to collect that $65 a month every month for the next 30 years. And guess what? If they never have to fucking pay out on a claim because you're smart enough to know when you can and can't use lethal force, then they only win. They just keep raking in the fucking money. And that's pretty much, it's insurance companies in general, honestly, which is why I can't figure out why the biggest lobby in the country, which I think is insurance, I could be wrong, why they don't lobby for health foods more often. But, I mean, I digress. We don't have to get to that either. That's a real fucking, that's a real cherry of a conversation. So your training has to match what you're doing. So if you have like a, if you have a Glock 19, right, and that's like a 5 on the effectiveness scale, but your training is out of this world. You're 10 out of 10. So 5 times 10, you're now 50, right? Versus the other way around where you have 1 or 2 on training, it's a 10 versus a 50. And guess what? That amount, that value of that Glock 19 and what it can do was a fixed number 5. You control the slider on that skill. You control the multiplier. You control the variable there. You decide how capable you want to be, and that's directly tied to how much training you get. It doesn't always have to be classes. I think a lot of times people look at it and go, oh, I don't have $4, $5, $6, whatever, $100 to go to a class. And it's like, well, you don't have to. You could take one class and then spend the next year. Maybe you could spend the next 2 years working on the drills from that class until you get better and better and better and more proficient with it. And then if you train with guys, they can bring some drills and stuff they learned in their classes. It doesn't have to be, hey, I'm going to go spend $900 for this class with $300 worth of ammo plus travel costs, right? I mean, I think you should still do some of that stuff because, you know, those trips are really, really fucking fun. We're going to be going on the trip back out to the Human Trafficking Awareness, or HTA, or Range Day at Ben Franklin Range in Pennsylvania at the end of next month. Not so shameless shout out to those guys. If you're looking to participate, it's a Saturday and Sunday event. I think you should go check it out. Their Instagram page has a link to it. But getting back into this, there's specific training like CQB, like small unit tactics, that you need to be able to not only shoot on the flat range, but employ that weapon system in those, I'll use those, the words context is what I'll say there. And it becomes very relevant. So if you're on the flat range, you're only working ready up drills, static drills, no movement, right? And then you go to work CQB and you're running around the place, you're running through doors, you're sliding through, and are you going to be able to put rounds on target accurately at the speed at which you're trying to simulate the structure clearance in your CQB training? And I say this as somebody who got this as feedback very, very recently. hey, we had a guy come out, teaches with Core Vision, former Ranger, cool dude, very squared away. And hey, you guys are going too fast. Like, oh, we don't feel like we're going too fast. Listen, man, think about it in terms of this. And this is where it really hit me where I live. And I go, he's onto something here. This is fucking right. You know, put the ego away and see the message for what it is. If you were moving this quickly on the flat range, would you be hitting A zones? And I was like, fuck, you really think? And everyone sitting there in front of their buddies is like, fuck yeah, I'm fucking stacking rounds. I'm slaying bode. No, you're not. You're fucking not. And I know for a fact half the guys that I was there with are definitely not fucking doing that. So it becomes this question of how quickly can you move and shoot accurately? Because again, we're talking about maximizing our accountability here. Every time we squeeze that trigger, we are responsible for the lead that we put down range. So same thing with small unit tactics. Are you going out in the woods and everything? Well, hey, are you going to be able to shoot, move, communicate effectively and accurately, right? As you're trying to climb over and under logs and you're standing and running and walking or whatever on uneven ground where you could step into a hole. If it's just rain, the leaves can be packed down and get very slick, you know, so there's environmental factors just like with CQB, albeit different ones, right? But are you still effective and capable in those circumstances based off the training that you have? I don't know. I'm not saying you should pursue one over the other, but I am saying that static drills on the range and even just basic movement drills on the range are not always going to be enough, but you should do the best that you can to incorporate movement into your shooting and into your training if you plan on being combat effective or whatever. Yeah, I don't know how else to say that. If you plan on being capable with a firearm, I suppose, right? It's probably going to involve some sort of movement, and it's probably going to involve some sort of shooting. That's the nature of having a firearm. It's not just there to like throw at somebody. Although if you've seen Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man, that does happen in that movie. Mickey Rourke definitely misses an opportunity to blow a dude away with a shotgun and instead throws it at him, which is interesting. But yeah, the training part is huge to that. And then as you bring in additional supporting gear, additional supporting kit into the conversation, now that changes the game. And two excellent examples on that. I'll speak mostly on one because that's where my experience lies. Two great examples of that are drones, right? And night vision. Now, I don't know a ton about drones, so I won't get into that necessarily, other than to say that it is a game changer and it can be a force multiplier because it gives you the ability to utilize cameras on board, whether it's an FPV drone or not, and gather more information so you can make better decisions. So from a tactical and planning standpoint, where you want to go, where you need to go, so whether you're pursuing somebody, right, or you're trying to get somewhere safely, the more information you can safely acquire on the path you have to take to achieve that goal, you know, both literally and figuratively, the better off you'll be. But one that everybody likes to talk about and likes to gravitate to is night vision. And I guess technically we'll say low light work too, because you can operate in the dark with a white light. There's considerations for that, but it changes the game because of the people listening to this, I know a good majority of you guys, and I'm not saying this to be an asshole, but you can't afford night vision. A lot of you guys want it. Everybody fucking wants it. Go check out Custom Night Vision, you guys. CustomNightVision.com. That's the website. They're great supporters of ours. If you're one of those guys that insists on fast-forwarding through the ad space, they're a huge supporter of ours and have been for a couple of years now. They have great prices and stuff like that if you're looking to get into night vision. But it's a game changer because people can't see in the dark. And if the people that you're opposing, right, this is where we get into the whole conversation around near-peer forces and why everybody was so pissed off, and rightfully so, that we left, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of night vision in Afghanistan for, you know, the fucking Taliban and shit. Those 1531s are not cheap units. Those are like $12,000 to $15,000 units each, and there were probably a couple hundred of those that were left over there, I would estimate. And there was like rough numbers put out to the media about all this stuff. I don't know how accurate any of it is, but night vision changes the game because in good and bad ways, it does magnify your strengths and it does magnify your weaknesses. And here's what I mean. From a weakness standpoint, if you are not good at physically moving, and if you are not an athletic person and you struggle to get your footing on things, you can't balance well, you're very, very clumsy. If you are slow behind the gun because you haven't trained and dry practiced or whatever enough with your laser, or even if you're passive aiming with your optic and your dot, night vision becomes a hindrance pretty fucking quickly. Additionally, if you don't understand how to effectively use it, a lot of those units, for example, they come with an IR illuminator built in. That's just a fancy way of saying there's a flashlight of light that only exists on the IR spectrum. So if you have nods, that's how you see the flashlight. Otherwise, it's completely dark to you. And a lot of guys will just turn that shit on. They only run their night vision with their illuminator on because look how much more I can see, which I agree with. You should be able to see so you don't fall and trip or do something silly. However, it's a huge weakness when you don't realize that, hey, maybe some of these like near peer forces are not your friends, maybe they're your enemy, and they have night vision as well. And if you're walking around with an illuminator turned on, it's you know, the jig's up. They can see you now, but you're all but operating in daylight now because you lost that shroud of darkness. So if you aren't training to that level with it, you can't expect yourself to be effective in a combat situation. You know, I hate calling it combat. I don't know what else to fucking call it, like a lethal engagement, I suppose. But it can also be a huge strength because if you do know how to employ this tool correctly, you know when to use white light override, which is just, hey, when you need to actually turn on your regular old flashlight, because maybe that other person does have night vision and you know that your fucking cloud defensive rain is going to just fucking gate the shit out of their night vision, but you understand that. Or if you're in law enforcement and you have to announce yourself, you can't just roll in like you're on the fucking Bin Laden raid and snatch somebody up out of their bed. You have to announce your presence there. There's certain things that are required of law enforcement. You know, night vision can be a huge strength and the skills that go with it can be a huge strength. Obviously, it's a game changer in terms of just being able to fucking walk in the dark and see. You don't have to have flashlights on. You don't have to do, you know, any of the flood lighting, like construction lights and stuff or anything like that. You can see in the dark. It's a pretty obvious capability enhancement and a game changer. Now, the one thing that I think a lot of people fall back to and rely on is that, like I said, not everybody can afford it. So a lot of people want to have that overarching and over, I guess, or that looming idea that they put it in their head and they don't ever think about it again, is that I know what it took for me to save up and get this. I'm sure nobody else has it. Or, hey, I know how many people in my training circle don't have night vision, so I'm just not going to worry about it because, you know, one out of maybe 10 people probably have it. And that's a terrible way to evaluate that data and make those decisions. It really is. Because in reality, you could just, you know, that could just be the way that your circle of friends is. And there could be people all around you that you don't know about, and they all run night vision. I am constantly shocked and surprised. I mean, pleasantly so, but still surprised at the number of people that I come across in this state and in this area who run nods on a regular basis. I mean, shit, I met a guy not that long ago, probably, I think it was during the winter, maybe during the fall or something. Shane from Terrace Unity Solutions. He lives like 7 minutes away from me and has for a couple of years now ran a night vision company. He shoots competitions. He's friends with the guys over at Custom Night Vision, who I've obviously known for several years. And it's like, I just, out of the, hey, you're, I live in this city. That's right next to my city. I live at this intersection. Dude, I drive past that, you know, when I go to Costco. He goes, yeah, man, I'm right there. It's wild. And yeah, you better believe he's got access to night vision. And if he does, then the guys that he works with have night vision too. And they're also in the area. So you start, you know, you can't always approach it from the point of most convenience or the position of greatest convenience, especially with tools like night vision. And like I said, with drones and stuff, oh, you know, I know good drones are expensive, so I'm sure nobody has one. No, that's just not, you know, I know how expensive Porsches are and Corvettes. And I see so many old people that live, I mean, I live in an area where we have it's a real dedicated mix of like, you're either really old and on the verge of retiring if you haven't already, or new families. There's not a ton of in between. I see a ton of Porsches. I see a ton of Corvettes flying around my area all the fucking time. And it's like, okay, cool. So more affordable and accessible than I thought. So just because it's not accessible for you does not mean that it's not accessible for other people. Don't make that assumption, and don't, more importantly, don't plan and make your contingency planning and things like that based off of those assumptions, because then your entire, when that planning encounters resistance, your entire game plan goes down the shitter real fucking fast. Okay. You need to be more flexible with how you look at things. You need to plan for the worst. understand the right, utilize the training, you know, that you're going to get, and the tools that you have, whether they're regular or specialty or whatever, you know, like firearms, I consider, firearms and binoculars, spotting scopes, whatever, I consider all that stuff to be like, quote unquote, regular. And then specialized gear, I consider to be tools like, you know, night vision, drones, if there's actual like specialized breaching tools, or you have access to something else, you know, that most people don't, whether that's like mesh-tastic or some kind of other specialized tool solution, right, that most people won't have access to. Like, yeah, if you can run everything through ATAC and communicate, you know, over text via a mesh node, like, hey, then yeah, I would say, you know, well, those are all open source things, so maybe don't assume nobody else has it, but you're probably in a better situation than most, purely because it's pretty well documented in a lot of cases that people can't get access to some of those things. But it's only getting easier, especially on the communication side. So even there, with the encryption bit and all that stuff, even the encryption piece is not everything that was, you know, it was cracked up to be 2-3 years ago, as we're seeing the emergence of more civilian accessible and more civilian friendly tools and solutions. And you know, when we look at all of this stuff from a culture and a mindset standpoint, how our community, the attitude, how our willingness to learn it shapes our long-term success. You can see it. What I'm telling you here is not bullshit. If you look at the guys in this community, and I when you say that, you're pointing towards people in like the gun tube space, you know, but you know, a lot of them, they're not lying to you. They have found that success. They do have that capability. I think about the guys at like Dirty Civilian. I think about, you know, some of these channels out there where it's like, they've actually done this stuff. That's how they're able to bring this information to you. Now, there's other channels out there that are still very good, but for different reasons. A lot of them just do gear testing and gear review. Those are really, really good sources of information for different reasons. But when you look at the long-term success, if that is your goal, because, you know, I think we've pretty much highlighted and demonstrated through the, it's already over an hour, that we've been talking about this, that this is a long-term plan. This is not, and that's where everybody gets twisted. They want to, you know, here, I'm going to do this overnight, so I'm going to buy all the cheap shit, you know, the Uncle Mike's nylon holster and the High Point pistol and the High Point carbine, and I'm going to get all the crappy, you know, Condor gear just so I have everything everybody else does, but it's way fucking worse. No, you have to invest in this. And should you overinvest? No. We've talked about that, right? You will get everything out of this that you put into it. So if you take, and that starts from the point of conception, excuse me. So what I mean when I say the point of conception is when you discover that this community and these activities and this lifestyle exists, point of conception for me is that when you decide that you want to start spending money on firearms, optics, gear, like belts and holsters and stuff, you are, every decision from that point on is immediately impactful of your long-term planning for your long-term success. And your attitude tied to that is a huge factor in it. That's why, you know, I really struggle with a lot of people that'll say, oh, you know, I'm just buying this because I'm just concealed carrying. I go, okay, so what do you got? Oh, I got a Glock 48. I go, okay, decent choice, man. What are you putting on it for a light? Oh, I don't need a light. And you go, okay, do you carry a flashlight with you normally? And you go, no, I have my cell phone. Okay, well, is it the MOS? Are you putting an optic on it? What's an optic? I go, you know, a little red dot. Like, think about, you know, Call of Duty, little screen on top of it with a red dot. You look through it to aim. Oh, no, I don't need all that fancy stuff. This is just for self-defense. And I go, okay, you know, I'm like, well, did you get a holster? Like, yeah, I picked up this one, you know, and they show me it, where it's like, and it literally is either an Uncle Mike's or a Serpa or something. And it's like, listen, you bought the firearm. So to me, that's still a relatively low level of investment into the overall success and the skill set. And I try to find a good way to explain that to people. I go, you really should look at getting a weapon light. You can leave irons on there if you want. That's up to you. You should look into a weapon light if you're not going to carry a flashlight. And then regardless, you need to look into a class on how to shoot that fucking thing. Because unless you grew up in a family that took you out shooting, took you to the range, and this is your first firearm because you just turned, you know, whatever age, and you finally bought one, you're not going to shoot your dad's shit anymore. And even sometimes if you did grow up shooting, whatever, you probably didn't learn the right ways, go take a fucking class. Go get training and then get a range membership somewhere. And here's why. Because guys want to, I don't need a whole range membership. Well, if you're just going to go bullseye at the local gun range, which is terrible. I used to love the indoor range because it was all I knew. And then I was like, this fucking sucks as soon as I used an outdoor range. Indoor ranges cost you about $20 per half hour that you go there, which is about enough time to realistically put down maybe 100 rounds of 9mm. And at least at the range that I'm a membership or I have a membership to, if you come in as a non-member, it is also $20. But that gets you access to the ranges for the entire day, and that's all ranges. So if you want to go do, you want to go shoot some skeet at one of the trap ranges or something, you can do that. You can shoot 100 yards, 200 yards. If it's a special event day, maybe even 600 yards, although that costs a little bit more. You could shoot at 25 yards or 50 yards. You can move around and shoot, and you can do it all day long. You can even leave, go get some fucking lunch because there's an A&W up the road, and then come back in and shoot more later. And it's still the same $20 as a non-member. And people will look at, oh, yeah, I don't need all that. And it's like, yeah, you really fucking do. It's if you are wielding a tool in your hand which possesses the ability to take a human life, you better realize that's a big fucking deal. And then that's where the dangerous part comes in is people assume that just because they have that handgun, or maybe it's just a rifle, shotgun, whatever, that they have all of their bases covered. And they really, really don't. It's everything we just talked about, right? It's having the right kind of gear. And that doesn't mean you have to have the top shelf of everything. You don't even need to have, as much as I would like people to wear armor and have that stuff available to them, you don't have to have all the other shit. Certainly when we talk about gear and skill and how it all works together with training, you start from the head down. A helmet is a huge investment. That's like, you know, anywhere from $600 or $800. I mean, you can go as low as $300 if you're getting a bump helmet. But $600 or $800 up to $2,000 or more for a helmet, plus $500 or $600 for decent ear pro that has comms built into it, right? And I'm not doing all the math on this. You guys can fucking keep on your own. $3,500 for a PVS 14, right? So in the helmet alone right there, we're at like $7,000, I'm pretty sure, $6,000 right now. And then you get, oh, I need a plate carrier. You know, plates are $500 plus. You got to have the carrier, which depending on what you get can be as little as $200 and as much as $1,000. You know, then you get to a belt and a holster and all this. So there's a lot of investment that goes into this, and you need to spread the wealth, man. You need to share the wealth and spread it around so that, like, why do you have that belt with the holster? The holster is to carry my handgun so I can safely transport it and draw from it and be effective with that handgun. Well, why do you need the holster? Because I carry a rifle. Why do you carry the rifle? Because it allows me, A, higher ammo capacity, B, a more accurate round. The 5.56 is inherently more accurate at any kind of range, really, than the 9mm handgun round is. That's not talking smack. That's why so many agencies and teams moved from MP5s to short-barreled AR-15s. That's anybody who ran those things will fucking tell you. The 9mm is good for a lot of stuff. Shooting at distance, not one of them, all right? Okay, well, then why do you have the plate carrier? Because the plate carrier carries my plates, and it also carries all my other supporting kit. Extra ammo, radio, most importantly, medical, right? Because if I can create holes, I need to be able to plug holes too. So I need stop the bleed supplies on my kit, whether that's on my belt and my carrier, or one or the other, need to have them both. And it all feeds into itself. So it's when people go, I don't need that, I only need this. A lot of times they're not understanding what they're shortchanging themselves on when they cut out things. Oh, I don't need a dump pouch. Well, okay, maybe you don't. That's probably actually, you know, as I say this, and I wonder if Blake listens to this, but, you know, some people really hate dump pouches and they make fun of them. And I think it's hilarious because I really don't, I could give two shits less. You know, it's a nylon trash bag, essentially. If you're doing this work for real, you probably don't need me to tell you this stuff, but people do SSE and they put stuff in their dump pouches. But you'll see a ton of guys online like, I have to have a fucking dump pouch. This is incredible. I need to have it. I think Agilite just released one, and there's a couple people. I know Walsh at Thinline. They did a video reviewing it, and they're like, yeah, I'm not like ripping on Walsh, but you know, he really liked it because it was a rifle mag pouch with a rolled up dump pouch on the outside of it and an elastic cord that came up and over that magazine. So when you drew that rifle mag to do an emergency reload or whatever, that elastic loop would lose tension and then the whole dump pouch would unroll and open up for you. And I'm like, I don't see any point to that personally, because just because I did a speed reload or an emergency reload, or I topped off or whatever doesn't mean I want my fucking dump pouch flapping around here getting caught on everything, you know, from here to there. Some people think that stuff's fantastic, and I think it's a really great idea, you know, that the execution of the concept was done really well. I just think that, like, if I want to deploy my dump pouch, I want to deploy my dump pouch. If I need to do a reload, I want to do my reload. I won't always need to do those two things at the same time, and I think that unless there might be a use case I'm missing with that, but it's just one of those things that exists. I'm like, yeah, I don't really get that one, man. I don't know. Like, cool that somebody put the time and thought into engineering it, and it's out in the market, and people seem to fucking love it. I personally just don't understand. But again, getting back to the point here, this is a long-term plan, and I think when we talk about a couple of things that are going to make you successful, having a long-term strategy, and I'm not saying yeah, there's not like an investment planner for preparedness that you can go to, although maybe that's a good business model. As I'm saying that out loud, maybe like some people have some, and I think some businesses do have like a full consultative suite where they can like, we'll plan a home defense plan for you, and we'll put this all together and blah, blah, and we'll tell you what to buy. And if you're one of those person who if you function better off of checklists, then, you know, more power to you. I don't know. As I'm saying that, I think we've had guests that offer that kind of thing. Excuse me, that offer that kind of thing. I could not tell you off the top of my head any that do, but I feel like there are companies out there that do it. But I think overall, the biggest part of this, because you can look at any one of these pieces and it's a variable timeline. Like, some people can get this stuff done in a year or 2 years. Some people, it takes 5 to 10 years, whatever, because it's all relative. It can be relative to your personal income. Obviously, you make more money, you'll have more money to play with. Like, that's just the way the world works. Everybody's situation is different. If you got 4 fucking kids or 6 fucking kids, then you have way less money than somebody who makes the exact same amount with 2 kids or no kids. So understanding and respecting, that's very different. The biggest piece about this, and I want to make sure that this is where we end, is the willingness to want to do this. The willingness to want to fucking get better. You know, it's not just, and I've seen this shit before, it always drives me out of my mind because I've lived through it. You know, I was that guy that thought that spending some money would get me something better, and then I'd go to the range and I'd shoot that new optic or whatever, and it was just never quite as fulfilling as I thought it was going to be. Like, it was going to change my world and I was going to be able to do everything different, you know. The willingness to do this and get better and invest in it, because it's very easy. It's very easy to sit here and say that you want to be more accountable. You want to be able to protect your family. You want to go run and gun. You want to learn CQB. You want to do all this stuff. But do you fucking really want to do it? And I'm speaking purely from a civilian standpoint right now, because if you signed up to be a police or if you signed up to be in the military, then that question's already, for the most part, answered itself. But it's in the civilian space all the time, and I know for a fact this is why a lot of LE and mil guys sour on the prepared civilian thing, is because people make their plans and execute their plans in half measures. Oh yeah, I want to build an AR pistol. Okay, cool. I think short barrel guns are good for a lot of things. Yeah, I just don't want to spend a lot of money when I do it. Okay, so what are you going to do? Oh, I'm just going to buy a full Palmetto State build. The Saber line, that's pretty good. No, I'm just going to get a regular one. And they build it out, and people get the cheapest shit that they can, and they get the cheap lights, they get the cheap optics, and then they get, you know, and here's the part that kills me the most, too, is they get upset when you call them out for it. Like, hey, that's just a very cheap setup. If it runs, it runs. Like, cool, man, more power to you. Go shoot the shit out of it. Go train and be effective. But you can't also then be upset when people are like, that's a pretty cheap setup, man. And you're like, what the fuck? No, it's not. Fuck you. Kiss my fucking, lick my asshole. And it's like, what it, I mean, yeah, maybe the way it was presented, though, that person was being a dick to you. But the question I would ask is, were they wrong? And if it bothers you that people are able to look at your gear and say that's cheap, and it has that, you have that kind of emotional reaction, clearly they struck a nerve, and clearly something about that does bother you. So do something about it. I'm not saying that other people's thoughts and opinions should make that difference. But however, what I am saying is that people who are very real and very serious about being invested in their own capability, their own ability to be dangerous, right? very seldom are they running budget end, super shitty, super cheap fucking rifle setups and stuff. They're not always the guys that are running the most expensive setup, because if something happens to it, you know, whatever. but they're not going to cheap out and buy the crappiest, cheapest thing out there. Usually they're going to have some pretty decent shit, you know? I think, honestly, of Jonah from 100 Concepts, seeing his 11.5-inch or 12.5-inch AR pistol that he travels with, and he has it as a pistol, so he can travel with it. It's got an LPVO, I think, with an acro mounted on the top, you know, and he's got a suppressor with it and stuff, and a laser and a light and all that good shit and everything, and he travels with that gun, and I think it's a Daniel gun, but he's obviously, he runs a company that is, I mean, their motto is do good, be dangerous, live free. He's clearly about this life, you know, and his choices behind a lot of that stuff reflect that. So you have to be willing to invest in this. You have to be willing to put in the time, put in the money, the effort, you know, to build yourself up, both in the training side and in the gear side. Like, it's not a one or the other. It's a both, and it's a balance. And we've talked about that several times throughout the last hour and 15 minutes as we've been sitting here, sitting here listening to me pontificate about it. The mindset is huge, and this is a big problem within our culture. We've been combating it for a long time. There's always been those FUD idiots that just buy the gun and think that that's enough. They rack the pump on the shotgun and think that's enough to scare away a home invader. At the end of the day, it's really not. And once you learn, you start to figure those things out for yourself. But when it comes right down to it, you guys, the best setup is the one that you can run well day or night under pressure. So, you know, that's my night vision gun. It's like, that's fucking dumb. If your gun is set up correctly for you to run it, it shouldn't matter. Is there a laser so you can run night vision? Cool. How are you without the night vision? I shoot way more without nods than I do with, so I'm pretty confident that covers that. You know what I mean? You need to be able to run it. This is why I got away from, you know, when people were like, oh, what kind of concealed carry gun do I get? I stopped recommending, you know, the 43 or the Shield or the 365. Like, hey, why don't you start by borrowing somebody's Glock 19, shoot that, and see if you can get to something smaller. The small handgun thing, you know, and I carry a 43X, and I like the 43X. It also, you know, I use the Shield Arms mag, so they're 15-rounders. You know, I can shoot that gun. I'm capable with that gun. It's fucking got a light on it, and it's got a red dot, and I carry a spare mag. So I feel pretty okay with that. But if you don't feel confident in deploying that weapon that you're, you know, alleging that you're going to carry for defense, you've missed something somewhere. Oh, dogs are hearing something. But you've missed something somewhere, and, you know, you need to go back and address it. And seriously, like, if you've been doing this for 5, 7, 17 years, whatever, and this recording is what hopefully then spurred you to go, I don't know, I need to go audit my skills, do it now. Yes, 17 years of the wrong way of thinking don't justify the next 7 days of poor planning, where you could potentially draw that firearm, shoot somebody unjustified, and then spend the rest of your life and fuck you in the ass prison. Think about it. So it's never too late to right the ship and adjust course, but you have to own it. You have to be willing. You have to have the right attitude about this, and we're never done getting better. That doesn't mean you got to buy new shit and go take a new class every month. Some fucking people insist on doing that. I think it's the most idiotic shit in the world that people will just go take one class every month, because I don't know about you, I got a lot of shit going on. In 1 month, I do not have the time to go refine, hone, develop, and perfect the skills that I learned in a class. So you're probably going to fucking forget that shit, and it's going to be all for nothing. You're going to have a, you know, hey, a high five and a couple, you know, Instagram posts to commemorate the event, but you're not actually going to have walked away working on those skills and developing them. You're not actually going to have gotten better, because even though you went through the fucking class for a day or 2 days or 3 days, the retention is what matters with that. And if you're not willing to put in the time to work on your retention and practice the skills you took away from it, just like, you know, your math homework when you went to math class for an hour in middle school or high school, you're not going to get any fucking better at doing math. You're just not. That's a tough pill for so many people to fucking swallow. Maybe I'll do a YouTube video on that. If you guys haven't checked out the YouTube channel, head over to our YouTube. It's, you know, it's The Prepared Mindset. And you can check out all the videos there. You can subscribe to support us, but maybe I'll do a video on that, because it's a big fucking deal. Going through class alone right, is not enough. Yes, you learn a ton in classes, and if you go through a really good class, like, you know, I've taken a bunch with the Ryan Training Group. I've taken a handful at Ann Arbor Arms here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Robbie is the head instructor there, does a phenomenal job. Really enjoyed all three classes that I've taken there. But did I come home and then work on stuff? Yeah. I mean, when I took the concealed carry course there, it was the next day or 2 days later, I went and dropped my fucking carry gun off to have it milled for an optic. I learned so much in that class. I learned how slow I was on irons compared to how everybody else was running with their red dots. And guess what? I was way fucking faster with the red dot. So it was worth the, it was like $150 for the milling plus the $300 for the optic. It's like a $500 investment all in all. It was fucking worth it. And if I hadn't gone to that class, I probably would still have that false sense of security around shooting my irons because I've, you know, how often do you pressure test yourself? Probably not as often as you should. So that class was my wake-up call. I went and got the red dot put on, and then I've since worked on those things. I work on drawing from concealment. I work on picking up the dot. I work on consistent handgun grip and being able to repeat those things and being, you know, be effective with those things. Because again, you guys, as civilians, also law enforcement and most military, you are accountable for every round you put down range. So what are you doing today or tomorrow or next week to put yourself in the best possible situation to be effective, capable, and most importantly, accountable in that regard. Hopefully this has all made sense. Hopefully this has been very helpful for you guys. I cannot believe as I'm sitting here saying this, I'm like looking at the little little counter as it scrolls as I'm going through talking and everything. I cannot fucking believe that I'm at an hour and 20 minutes just like ranting and raving about this stuff. But this is just my experience, you know, night vision. We didn't really even get that far into night vision, too. I mean, I've had tons of issues with that stuff, learning how to use it. And I still don't consider myself to be really good with it yet. But I have learned a ton, and it was with the help of people around me. But hopefully this has been helpful for you guys. And if you have takeaways, man, message me. Shoot me some messages, man. I'd love to hear this stuff from you guys. Leave some comments. But that's all I got for you guys for this week's episode. Thank you so much for hanging out and listening. Until next week, y'all stay safe out there, and like I always say, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.